Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Friday, October the 7th. As we like to do during election seasons, particularly 30 days before the election, we'll be chatting tonight with our friend Barry Castleman, the Prairie editor, and we're going to get an update on what's happening in the U.S. Senate, some very interesting races in the U.S. Senate, and we should be getting a good feel for what's happening in the U.S. Senate. So let me say hello to our friend Barry Castleman. How are you, Barry? Welcome to the show, as always.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Well, I got to tell you, I bet you're pretty happy with Aaron Judge hitting number 62.
I am, and my Yankees they got a bye, and then they have a shot at the World Series. They're going to have a couple of tough teams to face first. I don't know whether it'll be Houston or whoever, but it's an exciting time.
It is. It is an exciting time. And just a little bit of history here, Yankee history. Every time when Babe Ruth hit number 60, when Maris hit 61, both of those times the Yankees went on to win the World Series. So you never know. Maybe the same thing will happen now that Judge hit 62. But you know, he's a very nice young man. He's a great, you know, if you're going to make him the face of baseball, it's just great. I mean, he's just a wonderful young man, a great image for the game.
Yes, indeed.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to look at the Senate tonight, and you're also going to update us a little bit on governors. But I got to ask you a general question. OPEC cut production this week. That, to me, was like a slap in the face of the United States. How did you react to it?
Well, it was certainly a slap in the face to President Joseph Biden.
Yeah.
And a problem for him because, unless I'm mistaken, the gas prices are going to start rising from now until Election Day. That's not a good sign for the Democrats.
No, in fact, Barry, they've already gone up here. They were like $2.99 in a few places, and now they're up to $3.19, $3.29. So they've gone up about 30 cents already. Now, whether it's because of OPEC or something else, but yeah, you're right. The trend is not good when it comes to gasoline prices. Well, before we get to the U.S. Senate, and I'm sure we'll go one by one, and you'll give us a good report on that. What are you seeing with governors? You've detected something with the governors' races, and I'm anxious to hear that. So please tell us.
Well, it's an interesting pattern. It's just begun. It's only about a few days old. And here's the pattern. Of course, there are many more Republican governors up for election than Democratic governors, incumbents, but it doesn't seem to be hurting the Republicans' opportunity to actually make gains. But there's an interesting pattern. A lot of so-called safe governors, and that includes Tony Evers in Wisconsin, Tim Walz in Minnesota, Mrs. Hochul in New York. These were supposedly pretty safe, and all of them, until about a week ago, had safe margins. And also in Nevada, the incumbent governor, Sisolak, I think is the name, was also several points ahead. Suddenly, almost overnight, there's been a dramatic change. The most dramatic shift was in New York, where the incumbent, Mrs. Hochul, was double digits ahead, and then suddenly, I think yesterday or the day before, the new Trafalgar poll has her barely 2 points ahead of Zeldin, and she's at 45. But the same thing is happening in Wisconsin, where the Tony Evers, the incumbent, is now behind Tim Michaels, and where Walz, who was double digits ahead in Minnesota here in Minnesota, it's now a tie. And on the other hand, in the incumbents, certain incumbent Republican governors who thought might be vulnerable are pulling way ahead. Kim Reynolds in Iowa, DeSantis in Florida, Kemp in Georgia, Kristi Noem in South Dakota. The guy in North Dakota was, of course, going to win big anyway. So what we see here is a sudden, just before the election, the time when the undecideds and the independents make up their minds, suddenly a shift in the governor's races, in the states. Now, I don't know whether this is a portent for what's going to happen in the next week or two or three in the House and Senate races, but it's a very interesting phenomenon. I think it has something to do with the way that the two kinds of governors behaved during the pandemic with lockdowns and mask mandates and school closings. The Democrats, of course, were into lockdowns that became very unpopular. And the Republicans, such as, of course, DeSantis, were much more open about closing businesses down. And, of course, they had pretty much the same results. So I think the voters, and I've seen some pieces written earlier about that there's a sort of a lockdown voter who was very unhappy, especially small businessmen who were hurt so badly by the lockdowns.
Yeah, that's
and
interesting.
I think that they're starting to register, and I think we might have a sign. I'm not making it a prediction, but I think it's very interesting to note, and I think that you and I and your listeners should pay attention over the next week or two to see if this pattern is repeated in the House and Senate races.
Well, I was keeping an eye of just personal interest. I was keeping an eye to Wisconsin on the race up there, and that is now beginning to look more favorable for the Republicans. But Barry, I think one issue. I agree with you about the lockdowns, and I agree with you about anger over the lockdowns. But I think there's maybe two other issues that are affecting the governors directly, the incumbent governors directly. One is crime, and the other is parents are angry about the way their kids were treated, and in some cases are being treated in some of these schools. And unfortunately, the Democrat Party has became so associated with the teachers' union, and I just think the parents are angry at the teachers' union, so they're going to take it out on Democrats, as we saw in Virginia, Barry.
Right. Well, I had already mentioned the school issue.
Yeah.
But you're absolutely right about the crime issue. It's very big in Minnesota here, where we've had in the Twin Cities so much violence and crime, and the Democrats are in charge completely.
Mm-hmm.
And there's going to be a reaction because that's the Republicans are. There's been a dramatic shift in the election here in Minnesota, which is usually a blue state and was expected to be another across the board win for the Democrats. They call themselves Democratic Farmer Labor Party or DFL here, but it now looks like there's a possibility of a Republican sweep, not only of the governorship but the constitutional officers, and even a pickup of one of the U.S. House seats and the taking back the state legislature.
Wow.
So, and that's had a lot to do with the crime issue.
Yeah.
And
no, I think the crime issue, is just horrific. I mean, when you look at some of these scenes, like in Philadelphia, we'll talk about Pennsylvania later, but when you look at what's happening in some of these cities like Philadelphia, and you see, people breaking into these stores, and apparently nothing happens to these people. It becomes a political problem, I have to believe, like you're saying, for the incumbents. Anything else on the governor? How does the governor's race in Texas look up there? I mean, down here, the governor seems to have about a 9 to 10 point lead in all the polling data that we've seen. How do you see it from up there, the race for governor?
Oh, I rely on you, but you've been sending me materials.
Yeah.
And I'm following it. I think that Beto is going nowhere.
Yes.
And the other race we need to mention in terms of governors, I forgot to mention, was the shocking surprise of the Republican taking the lead, apropos of my earlier comment, in Oregon.
Yes.
Against an incumbent Democrat.
Yes.
Oregon, of course, is a traditional blue state, and that's a big surprise. And I don't know how that affects the Senate race there, although we know that, and we'll get to this later, but the state of Washington, it turns out, is a very competitive Senate race that was expected not to be even remotely close.
Well, I'm going to take a guess that the situation in Oregon and in Washington, crime, are factors there too, because you have Seattle, the problems
yes,
they had, and Portland, the problems they had. I mean, I look, at some point, you know, people get angry when they see, you know, their cities are being torn up by crime and all of that, and they take it out on, obviously, on the incumbents. Well, let's take a look at the Senate, and I wrote down several states here, but you tell me which ones are you – why don't you just tell me which ones you're watching, and I'll let you bring up, you know, each state, or would you like me to bring up the state? How should we do it?
Well, I'll give you – I'll name the states that I think are competitive.
Okay, well –
In one way or another.
Why don't we begin with that? So we're going to look now at competitive states. Okay, great.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Wisconsin, North Carolina, Arizona, Nevada, Georgia, Florida, Washington, New Hampshire, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Vermont.
Okay. So let's look at a couple you mentioned there. Pennsylvania, that's the one where Dr. Oz apparently is starting to get over or go over Mr. Fetterman in some of the last polls I've seen, right?
Well, Fetterman is imploding.
Yes.
Turns out he's a terrible candidate, and with all due respect, he's not a well man.
No.
And he can't campaign. He's using substitutes and surrogates to campaign for him. And he's politically speaking, way off on the left. He's tried to appear to be more moderate, whereas Oz, it turns out, is a very good candidate.
Right.
He's a little inexperienced, and his campaign hasn't been the best one that's ever been, but he is probably tied right now, and I think it doesn't look good in Pennsylvania for the Democrats.
Yeah.
On the other hand, they're probably going to win the governorship.
Right. That's the one that looks good for them. But the case of Fetterman is really tragic, I think, because as you say, you know, he suffered a stroke a few months ago, and it would have been better, I think, for him to say, look, I cannot do it. I'm going to back out, and I'm not going to do it. Now, I don't know why he stayed on as a candidate. I don't know if the party had him do it or his ego was involved, but it would have been a heck of a lot better for him to sit this one out and let the Democrats nominate somebody else, Barry.
Well, I'm sure it's ego, and I'm sure he felt he could bluff his way through because he's bluffed his way through everything else. It turns out he's a bluffer.
Yes.
He was the mayor of a tiny, tiny town, didn't even do a good job, claimed he did. The media was on his side. He's very, very controversial on crime, guns. I mean, it's a terrible... And meanwhile, Oz, who's a celebrity and never run before, has been doing all the right things in terms of getting to know people and going out and meeting people and shaking hands. And it turns out he's a much more likable guy than he was painted as.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's certainly coming on strong. And I think Pennsylvania, there's going to be a lot of ticket splitting in Pennsylvania.
Yes. Well, Pennsylvania is a very important state because that is one that Democrats thought they were going to flip. So if you hold Pennsylvania, your chances of getting a majority improve tremendously. But I feel bad. I've seen videos of Mr. Fetterman, and he looks terrible. I mean, he's just absolutely awful. I mean, he should have just sat this one out. And I am keeping up with Dr. Oz from Selena Zito, who's been writing some great, you know, articles about what's happening there in Pennsylvania. And she continues to report that Dr. Oz is out there, you know, he's like walking the streets and knocking on doors, sort of an
old-fashioned... Just what I just got through telling you.
Yeah, it's kind of an old-fashioned retail campaign,
yeah.
Which is what often... And as you indicated, Bear, he's more likable, I thought, than people thought. But he's a television personality, too, so he's familiar with
television. The other thing is, President Biden has really messed up. He won the state by the narrowest of margins.
Mm-hmm.
And then he turned off everybody in western Pennsylvania with his energy policies.
Yes.
And as you pointed out earlier, the crime issue is completely out of control in Philadelphia. And you have a controversial district attorney. So Pennsylvania is really it's a sort of a purple state. But I think I'm not very positive about the Republican candidate for governor.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they would win that one, too.
Right. But you do like Dr. Oz. You like him.
No
question.
I think he has a very good chance to win.
Yes. Now, the other one that I am very concerned with, this is your list of competitives, and I'm concerned because of the media coverage, is Georgia with Herschel Walker. They're after Herschel Walker with a story, personal stories about an abortion and a woman accusing him of paying him for an abortion and stuff like that. And this is, you know, he's getting the same coverage that that fellow in Alabama got. Remember, what was his name? Whatever his name was in Alabama, who was being accused of doing something 39 years before or something like that. And the media is really obsessed with the Herschel Walker story. Is he being hurt by this, in your opinion, Barry?
Well, I don't think he's being helped.
Right.
Of course, his opponent is also a very controversial figure.
Sure.
Very left-wing figure, and has his own set of personal problems. The media, of course, is playing up. But you'll notice that the Republican governor, Kemp, is doing very well, has solid leads all along, he hasn't trailed ever. And I think perhaps President Trump may come in at the end to help Walker, who he endorsed. And I share your ambivalence about the outcome of that race. There is no guarantee that the Republicans will win that race. Georgia is a very funny place, as we learned in 2020.
Right. But I think that if Walker didn't have these problems, I'd feel a lot better. But obviously these problems are not helping. But with the governor leading by as many as 7 points, Governor Kemp, I sure hope that he can drag a few votes for Herschel Walker, especially if they campaign together, Barry.
Well, as I said, I think President Trump, who's still popular in the state,
yes,
will come in and help.
Absolutely. And that's going to be a tremendous help for Herschel Walker. Let me take a little break, Barry. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation about the U.S. Senate with our good friend Barry Castleman. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, tonight with our friend Barry Castleman, the Prairie editor. Barry, one of the states that I felt very comfortable all along was Nevada, and that's because the candidate there, Mr. Laxalt, is such a good candidate. I mean, he's, you know, I wish we had 20 more like him, because he's the great candidate. But I had some concerns about Arizona. But last night they had a debate, and apparently Blake Masters did a fantastic job against Senator Kelly. Are you familiar with that?
I wasn't aware of the debate, but Masters was here for a fundraiser, which I attended, as was Laxalt. And I was very impressed with each of them. I thought I was going to be impressed with Laxalt, but I was very skeptical of Masters. But he quickly persuaded me through his manner and his approach that he was a very serious candidate and actually a good candidate. And I think now that I understand that Peter Thiel, who he used to work for, is going to concentrate on getting him elected, I think that he has a good chance. Kelly, of course, is a very liberal senator. He pretends to be more moderate. And the question is, will Masters have the funds to advertise and tell his story and reveal that Kelly is not what he seems to be?
Mm-hmm.
But I think that race is definitely in play. But as you point out, it's one of the ones that is most undecided. There are a few of those races which are very undecided, and that's one of them.
Yeah. Well, this is Arizona is another one of those races that is going to put President Trump to the test, because if the Republicans, let's say, do not pick up the Senate, I think many people will blame it on President Trump because of some of the choices or some of the candidates that he endorsed. Although, again, I am not pessimistic about these candidates, but they're all brand new people who've never campaigned before.
Some of them are not. I mean, like the candidate in Pennsylvania was not a very good candidate. And but I guess the Mrs. Lake, his candidate in Arizona, is doing well.
She is.
And so I think she has a good chance to win because her opponent, the Democrat, is even flakier.
Right. No, yes. I know what you mean.
And we have a number of somewhat flaky candidates on both sides in this cycle. And but some of them are doing okay, like Masters. I think Mr. Budd is going to win in North Carolina,
mm-hmm.
though he has a serious opponent. I think Johnson, the other thing about Wisconsin you mentioned earlier, normally the polls, even right up to Election Day, show the Democrats winning in Wisconsin, both
mm-hmm.
governor
mm-hmm.
and senator, especially Senator. Johnson has won twice, but both times he was behind in the final polls.
Right.
This time he's ahead by 4 points or three, as is Tim Michaels, one of, again, Mr. Trump's choices, who's winning. I think it's very significant the polls are showing the Republicans ahead this close to the election. That's means that they're probably going to win.
Yes.
Big.
Now, one state that I'm keeping an eye on is New Hampshire, because I think there you have an incumbent who's never really. I think she won by 1,000 votes the last time around, and when I look at all the polls, she's under 50% in the polls, and there again, I don't know much about her opponent, but so. You think New Hampshire is competitive? What makes you think that?
Well, barely competitive.
Okay.
Mr. Gingrich has written a piece on how he thinks Mr. Former General Bolduc, the Republican, is going to win.
Mm-hmm.
And he may. And it's fairly close, partly because Hassan, the incumbent senator, the Democrat, is not very popular. And she normally would... If Bolduc defeated a more establishment Republican, who would have clearly won that race. But Bolduc may win. He's another one of those first-time candidates, a little bit off the reservation. And I'm a little skeptical, to be very honest. But he could win, especially if, as I said at the outset of the program, we're seeing the first omens of a red tide. We're seeing them in the governor's races. We're seeing them in the tightening of the polls of all races. And we're seeing them in the fact that everything seems to be turning south for the Democrats. and they seem to be doing a very good job of messing up their own chances. Not that the Republicans are doing that great a job, to be very honest, in most cases, but the Democrats are doing a very poor job, and the president isn't helping himself. There was a time there, about a month ago, when he was surging a little bit, and he was still in negative territory,
mm-hmm.
but he picked up about 5 or 6 points.
Mm-hmm.
But now he seems to be drifting backwards, as things like the OPEC thing and a couple of his private comments about, which I won't say on the air, expletives deleted, about himself, that really didn't help him. And so what we're seeing here is the beginnings of a wave. And if there's a wave, it doesn't really matter.
Right, right. That's
yeah,
right.
If there will be I, as you know on your show, predicted a couple of months ago that the Republicans would pick up anywhere from 30 to 60 seats.
Mm-hmm.
And that was considered far out. Mr. Gingrich also said pretty much the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But most commentators were thinking the top was 25 or 30.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe a lot less. But I'm beginning to think now, back on my larger number, this has beginning to feel like 1994, 2010, and 2016.
Right. That's exactly how I feel, you know, that especially 1994, that's what's really starting to feel like. Because in 94, you had a very unpopular President Clinton. And you had all the other issues as well, and it just seemed like every Democrat, the campaign was to take Clinton, and connect him to whoever the Democrat was, and the Democrat went down. I mean, if you remember that year, Governor Cuomo went down in 1994. I mean, that's how unpopular. Well, 94. I mean, the reelection. The first congressional campaign, I mean, for President Clinton. But in 1994, if you remember, Bill, I mean, if you remember, Barry, in 1994, Governor Cuomo went down in 1994,
right.
And that was a shocker. But now you speak of the red wave or tide or however you want to call it. There is a pollster. I don't know how much you follow him. Trafalgar. Have you? I'm sure you know who he is.
Oh, I've been writing a lot about him.
Yes, I know.
He's by far the best. And the point is, a lot of people poo-poo him because his background is a Republican.
Right.
It remains that in 2016, 2020, and 2021, he was by far the best pollster.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, he's been very right. He's just did a poll here in Minnesota, which shook everybody up because he pointed out it's basically a tie,
mm-hmm.
in Minnesota, and everybody thought that the Democrats were way ahead. Trafalgar may be a Republican by background, but his methodology is the most effective. He doesn't ask a lot of questions. He does a large sample always. You know, if you do a sample of under 1,000 for a statewide race, it's not very accurate.
Right.
And then if you just do landline or online, if you don't mix them up, it's also and of course you have to do likely voters, and there's some people who are still using registered voters. It's totally worthless.
Mm-hmm.
Registered voters and likely voters are completely different political animals in terms of who goes to the polls and what they think. And so Trafalgar does it the right way. So does Rasmussen.
Mm-hmm.
I think Emerson's a reasonably good poll as well. But we've had the experience with this Survey USA poll here in Minnesota, it's been way off.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the establishment polls, and it has to do with, as I've been pointing out, I wrote a piece about it.
Yes.
And talking about even leaving aside bias of the pollster, the very nature of polling today is problematic because most people, they have to keep calling
mm-hmm.
people to get it, to even get a response.
Right.
And then, of course, we learned in 2016, 2020, Republicans who get called often either don't answer or they give the wrong answer deliberately because they're very skeptical of the pollster.
Right.
So, and it doesn't take much wrong answers or, and of course, every time you have to recall on a call, you reduce your randomness.
Mm-hmm.
And as anyone points out, if the pollster says his margin of error is 3 or 4 or 5 points, you must double that or more. Most polls today have a margin of error of no less than 10 points. 10 points is relatively meaningless
mm-hmm.
at that point,
right?
Especially as we get close to the election.
One thing, if I could just say something about Trafalgar, I saw an interview the other night that he did. He was on television with Mike Huckabee, the governor, former Governor Huckabee. And they were talking about polling. And one of the things that he said is that often they'll call somebody and ask them, who do you think your neighbor is going to vote for? And they find that people are willing to say, well, he's going to vote for Trump. I know that. He's going to vote for Trump. And when they say that, very likely they're going to vote for Trump too. But they just don't want to tell a pollster that because they're afraid, as you say, of all kinds of things and, you know, people marching in front of their house or whatever. So polling has become a very difficult science. Or it was very easy, from what I understand, 30 or 40 years ago because people would actually answer the phone. Not today, Barry.
Right. And the other thing is, I also point out that as we get close to the election, however, pollsters are a little more careful
mm-hmm.
because they don't want to do what happened to the pollster in Wisconsin and so many other cases in Minnesota many times.
New Jersey in 2021. Remember that one?
Yes.
Last year, that was a disaster.
Right. So, and the reason is because they wait, in addition to all the other things, they wait the polls. So you never get a poll with raw data. They make a subjective decision about how many Democrats and how many Republicans,
mm-hmm.
and then they make a decide. I mean, they decide how many women, how many men, and they make all these decisions which alter the numbers. And it doesn't takes only a slight error in judgment to completely wreck a poll, which is what's happening. I think that, but even with all this,
mm-hmm.
the polls are showing in the last, as I point out in the governor's races, they're showing these dramatic shifts to the Republicans. And in the Senate races, a tightening of races where they had Democrats with big leads.
Mm-hmm.
Fetterman was 10 points ahead. Now he's 2 points ahead.
Yes.
They say.
Right.
He's fading fast. But there's a number of polls which are out there. And the fact that, for example, in Nevada, Laxalt and Lombardo's the gubernatorial, are now ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And in Wisconsin, they're ahead. Normally that doesn't happen, even right up to the election day. So that tells you that there's something going on. I'm hesitant to make a prediction, and I certainly don't want to get ahead of ourselves. The voters make the decision in the end, and I'm not going to second-guess the voters, but we appear to be seeing the beginnings of what we thought would be a red wave.
Let me ask you one more question, and at the same time, we should be planning. I'm looking at the calendar. And I'd like to have you back on Friday the 4th, which is Friday before the election. I think maybe we'll have a better idea then of what is going to happen. But let me ask you about abortion, because that was the issue that the Democrats really thought was going to put him back in the game. And they were getting a lot of publicity from it, and there, you know, some candidates were really animated by it. But I don't think that really worked out that way. I'm not saying that there are some people who are not going to be driven by abortion, but I'm just saying overall, I just don't think it changed anything because of the economy varying.
Well, my sense, the Republicans, after Roe versus Wade was overturned, I think the Republicans weren't very thoughtful mm-hmm. about how to handle it in the election. And a lot of Republicans said, well, we're just going to eliminate all abortions.
Right.
Instead of letting the states decide. And I think the Democrats took, as they should have, took advantage of those Democrats a little thought, didn't think things out. As the Democrats have changed their minds about defunding the police, Republicans are changing their minds about abortion. And I think the issue is a lot less. However, we shouldn't fool ourselves. The abortion issue is the one issue that has helped the Democrats and will give them a plus, and it will be a net plus for them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I also point out that the pro-choice and pro-life voters tend to be the voters no matter what. And so it's really, as you just suggested, not necessarily a huge difference, but I think we shouldn't fool ourselves. I think it's the one issue that has helped the Democrats.
Right.
However, as you also pointed out, and pollsters have confirmed, it is not the number one issue by any
right.
means.
I think
crime
that, yeah.
and the economy are much bigger issues, and those things. I mean, if the gas price of gas goes up 20, 30 cents
right.
or more in the next 4 weeks, the Democrats are in trouble.
Yes.
And that's why you saw the spectacle of Joe Biden going basically on his knees
yes.
to Venezuela,
gosh,
a yes. dictatorship, which we're not friends of ours, to get oil.
Right.
And he thought he could sweet-talk OPEC into it, and it didn't work. And because larger forces are at work here in the world,
mm-hmm.
and then the president uses up our reserves.
Oh gosh, yes.
And then he cancels the ability to do new exploration
mm-hmm.
and expand our production. So he's the author of his own problem.
Absolutely.
And but we'll see.
No, but I'll tell you one thing that I wanted to make a quick note. I wrote a note here to myself as you were speaking about the oil situation with OPEC and Venezuela. You know, getting cozy with Maduro in Venezuela is a real killer in Florida, because there's the Cuban vote, and there's another vote that is growing, slowly but growing, and that's Venezuelans. And they're anti-Maduro. So, you know, you don't want to be getting too cozy with Maduro, because that will help Marco Rubio quite a bit in Florida. The other thing I wanted to say about abortion, Barry, I agree with you that eventually what I think will happen is that there will be some kind of a compromise. And in most states, you'll have something like abortion is acceptable within certain weeks or whatever like that. And that's where I think we're going to go eventually. But if this was a different year, let's say, if the economy was not the factor that it is, then maybe the abortion factor would be more important. But when the economy being what it is, I think it basically just overlooks everything else, Barry.
Right, especially with the crime issue.
Yes.
Especially so, Philadelphia, which is again where the huge margins are created for the Democrats in Pennsylvania, is really torn by violence and crime, with a DA that doesn't want to prosecute.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's like what's happening in Minnesota, in the Twin Cities. I think, for example, the Republicans are actually making an important play for the Hispanic community,
mm-hmm.
for the they're going into the inner city neighborhoods, mm-hmm. for the Hmong and Southeast Asian community. They're doing things that Republicans haven't done in the past, but Republican Party is changing,
mm-hmm.
becoming a working class party and a party which is a haven for ethnic groups, and we're seeing that across the country, and it may be part of the wave.
Right.
We're not sure.
Not sure. We'll have to wait and see. You know, like
on
you
indicated. October 4th, we'll have a much clearer picture.
Yeah, on November. Yeah, November 4th.
Excuse me, November.
When we get together again, November 4th, which is the Friday before the election. But I will say this: we will know, of course, more specifically after the election. But what I'm beginning to see is that the Republican Party is becoming Hispanics are becoming more comfortable with the Republican Party, particularly Hispanics who are fed up with all of these crazy things coming out of the Democrat Party, you know, on family values, and also some of the crazy things coming out of the Democrat Party, blaming the United States for this and blaming the United States for that, and everything is racism and all of that. I think a lot of Hispanics who really love the United States find that objectionable, Barry.
Yes.
And I think that's where the if you will, not the divorce, but the separation from between the Republican or between Democrats and Latinos is happening. Barry, thank you so much for joining us. By the time we get together again on the 4th of November, I hope that I can say the world champion New York Yankees. I hope I can say that.
I know. I hope so, too.
It's going to be tough because, as you said, there were some tough teams before.
Well, Los Angeles is a great team.
They are.
It's probably
the Dodgers.
The best team in baseball.
Absolutely.
I don't know how you're going to beat them. But
well, I think it would be a great World Series between the Dodgers and the Yankees, if nothing else, because of the history that it evokes, you know, of those two franchises. So that's always fun when the Yankees play the Dodgers. But who knows? Who knows? But I do know that you and I will be talking together again on the 4th of November, Friday, and
good.
We'll have a really good sense of what will happen a few days later. As always, thank you for your time, Barry. Thank you very
thank
much
you.
For
always
joining us. It's always a pleasure for me to, you know, I kept telling some people that that hopefully will be listening tonight or listening to the podcast later, that you are very informative when it comes to these Senate races, and I learn a great deal from you, and I know many people do as well because they tell me. They tell me that they hear the podcast and they learn a lot from you, Barry. So keep up the great work, as they say.
Thank you.
Have a great day, Barry. Good night.
Good night
to Barry Castleman, the Prairie editor up in Minnesota. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we will talk to you later.